Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Optimal Living Daily, episode 183. Waking Up. Sam Harris discusses the benefits of mindfulness, part 2, by Joshua Fields Milburn of TheMinimalist.com. And I'm Justin Mollick. Hello again and welcome. This podcast is where I read to you from the best blogs I can find that cover personal development, minimalism, productivity, and even some finance and health and fitness and more. Whatever I can get my hands on with author permission to help you optimize your life. And today is a continuation of yesterday's post of Joshua Fields Milburn interviewing Sam Harris. So if you didn't hear episode 182, I'd recommend listening to that first. Otherwise, this episode will make a lot less sense. And if you like this podcast and this whole idea of bringing blogs to audio for free, please also subscribe to my spinoff podcast, Optimal Finance Daily, where I got a really nice guy to read blog posts about money from many of the same authors I read right here. Helping that podcast helps this one, so I really appreciate that. And so does Dan, I'm sure. Now let's continue yesterday's post and start optimizing your life. JFM. Approaching spirituality without religion can be confusing to believers and non-believers alike. In our culture, spirituality seems to be synonymous with faith, so much so it's hard to untangle the term and use it in any other context. And yet you do so masterfully, taking a rational approach to spiritual life, though it requires a considerable amount of unpacking to navigate the landscape around pseudo-spirituality and pseudoscience. So why not use a nomenclature with fewer limitations? In the book's endnotes, you mention Christopher Hitchens' use of the term numinous, which sounds equally as appropriate and beautiful, but without the contextual baggage. Sam. This was one of those rare instances in which the right words simply don't exist in English. Many of my fellow scientists object to the term spirituality because it has been so often associated with a belief in immaterial souls or spirits, magic, and so forth. They insist that I should confine myself to terms like awe, love, and happiness. The problem, however, is that these words don't cover the same terrain. Almost everyone knows what it is like to feel awe at the beauty of the night sky, to love their kids, or to feel genuinely happy, if only for a short time. But these states of mind are not the same as self-transcendence, nor do they indicate how subtle and transformative the investigation of one's own mind can be. Unfortunately, numinous doesn't do the job either, nor was Hitch talking about the kinds of insights and experiences I describe in my book. I'm certainly not happy with spiritual, and I do my best to strip it of its embarrassing associations early in the book. I also use the term contemplative, which more clearly indicates that all of this has to be put into practice. But if one wants to quickly name the project of becoming like the Buddha or Jesus or some other celebrated yogi or sage, that is, recapitulating their first-person insights in a 21st century context without believing any bullshit, quote-unquote spirituality seems unavoidable, provided you make it clear that you're not talking about the power of crystals. JFM. Much of waking up is laced with your personal life lessons, from experimenting with psychedelic drugs to spending years traveling Asia learning meditation with Buddhist and Hindu teachers. You discuss how we spend our lives in a neurotic trance, one in which we, quote, shop, gossip, argue, and ruminate our way to the grave, unquote, as well as how often we fail to appreciate what we have until we've lost it. Quote, we crave experiences, objects, relationships, only to grow bored with them, and yet the cravings persist, unquote. Why is this our default setting, and how does it keep us from being truly happy? Sam. There are many levels on which to answer that question. In evolutionary terms, we're probably lucky that we're not more miserable than we are. After all, our genes haven't been sculpted with our subjective well-being in mind. And the natural world surely wasn't created for our enjoyment. We've evolved to survive and spawn, to just barely equip our progeny to do the same. All the other good things in life appear to be lucky accidents. In large part, our problems are due to the immense power of language. We live in a world that is almost entirely defined by words. Our relationships, fears, interests, cultural institutions, the very objects around us are all the product of concepts that depend upon language, and this is no less true of our inner lives. Thinking is so useful that we are probably wired to do it continuously. Unfortunately, much of what we think about makes us miserable. To take a very simple example, Most people are very concerned about their social status, a preoccupation we share with our primate cousins. Unlike baboons, however, we can truly brood about our failures, projecting them into a recollected past and an imagined future. What's more, we can do this in an ever-widening context of social knowledge. If you're a baboon, at least you can seize the alpha male by the throat and try your luck. But when you're on the internet, contemplating the splendor of others, quote, "Oh, Gwyneth Paltrow is spending Christmas on St. Bart's, how nice," unquote, the odds are against your feeling fully satisfied with your place in the world. Millions of years of hominid evolution have not prepared us for Instagram. JFM, once I understood the importance of mindfulness in my own life, your guided meditations, theminimalist.com/Sam, helped me better understand how to meditate effectively. Your wife, Anaka, has successfully taught mindfulness practice to children as young as 6. Is it harder for a 33-year-old guy like myself to wake up compared to, say, an elementary school child? Should parents encourage their children to meditate? Sam, mindfulness is an extremely useful tool for kids. Just teaching them to be aware of their emotions is an important step toward basic sanity. But it probably requires an adult mind to discover the true power of the practice. So I think we've got an edge over the kids. JFM, the benefits of awareness are extraordinary. I believe your book, and mindfulness in general, will help people, as you say, quote, "escape the usual tides of psychological suffering," unquote. The crippling fear and anger and shame that ruin our present moment by illuminating everyone's ability to be free in the midst of whatever is happening. While this appears to be the primary benefit of spirituality, what other benefits have you experienced from mindfulness? Sam, there have been at least 4 or 5 occasions on which I've managed not to send a tweet. JFM, I'll see you at your Waking Up with Sam Harris lecture series in September. After embarking on a 100-city book tour this year myself, I now understand the benefits of face-to-face interaction with readers. What do you hope to accomplish with these live events that can't be achieved by just reading your book? Sam, a proper conversation. This is one of the true frustrations of being a writer. Your words get absorbed in your absence, often to unintended effect. At these events, I'll make my case for a rational spirituality for an hour and then spend another hour cleaning up the mess in a Q&A. Then we'll all start drinking, so wish me luck. JFM, good luck, and thank you for your time. Any final words? Sam, your mind is all you truly have, so it makes sense to train it. That was part 2 of Waking Up, Sam Harris Discusses the Benefits of Mindfulness by Joshua Fields Milburn of TheMinimalist.com. Being in control of my health means being super mindful of what I put in my body. From food to supplements, I'm always trying to find the best option out there, which is why I am so excited to tell you all about Thorne. With Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement because they go the extra mile when it comes to quality, manufacturing, and ingredients. In fact, they use such thorough testing and a super clean manufacturing process, they've earned some of the highest certifications in the industry. I even looked them up myself on a third-party lab testing site because I'm super careful. And after reading the reviews for their GI relief supplement, I tried it myself. And so far, it's working wonders. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/optimal and use code OPTIMAL for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/optimal, code OPTIMAL for 10% off your first order. thorne.fit/optimal, code OPTIMAL. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not limited to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Again, also from the minimalist book, Essential. And I'll mention it one more time, you can help keep this podcast alive by helping the spinoff of this show, Optimal Finance Daily. Simply subscribing to that is a great way to show your support, so please check that out if you like what you hear on this podcast. Tomorrow will be 1 week since my major emotional breakdown. Kind of crazy how fast it went. And I think I'm going to attempt to finally read to you live to get this podcast back to normal. I found a very relevant post from The Minimalist, and it's going to be a two-parter also, I think, because it's long, but it'll serve many purposes for me, and I think it'll be very valuable for you too. So I'll try to make that happen tomorrow, where your optimal life awaits.